Labor circles the wagons.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Cheryl Glazer. Leaders from six unions representing workers at bankrupt Delphi are scheduled to hold a powwow today in Detroit. They're working on a strategy to fight off the deep wage and benefit cuts the auto parts maker has been calling for. The company says its high labor costs put it at a competitive disadvantage. Delphi has about 50,000 U.S. workers on its payroll. Meanwhile, Delta Airlines is heading back to bankruptcy court this morning. It wants the judge to throw out the company's current contract with its pilots. And as Andrea Gardner reports, Delta could get its wish if history's any guide.
First, let's go back to the 80s. Duran Duran, big hair, leg warmers, and a new provision in the bankruptcy code called Section 1113. Congress wanted to make it tougher for employers to reject union contracts, so lawmakers added some legal hoops. Companies had to open their books and try to negotiate with union leaders. But despite these hoops, legal expert Christopher Cameron says companies are allowed to reject labor contracts most of the time.
Bankruptcy judges aren't particularly sympathetic as a group to employees or unions or their wage or benefit packages. The purpose of the bankruptcy laws are to give big companies like this, at least in Chapter 11, a chance to get back on their feet.
Cameron says he's betting Delta has done its homework and that the odds are stacked in its favor. I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
A bipartisan group of senators plans to roll out a bill today aimed at cutting America's dependence on foreign oil. In the past, a lot of the debates centered on oil production. But as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports, this time the focus is on consumption.
Hybrids, renewable fuels, electric plug-in vehicles, not the normal buzzwords for a conservative like Senator Sam Brownback. The Kansas Republican favors drilling for oil in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, but he also backs proposed legislation that would cut domestic oil consumption by 10 million barrels of oil per day within 20 years. Brownback says one target for conservation would be the half of America that drives less than 20 miles a day.
And if we could get that first 20 miles off of electricity or flex fuels like ethanol, we can radically reduce our oil dependency in America.
The bill would provide incentives to help move car makers and drivers toward alternative fuel vehicles. The plan should be a hit with Brownback's constituents, many of them farmers who could feed a growing market by converting grain into ethanol. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Take that. The Senate Finance Committee voted yesterday to slap a $5 billion tax next year on the country's biggest oil firms. The measure goes to the full Senate today. Between them, five of the top oil companies reported combined profits of $33 billion last quarter. Possible signs of simmering inflation put the brakes on the stock market. The Dow slid 10 points, a tenth of a percent yesterday, to close at 10,686. The Nasdaq skidded 14 points, two-thirds of a percent, while the S&P 500, it nicked off 4 points, a third of a percent. And a McBuyback? Well, one of McDonald's major shareholders is pushing the fast food king to orchestrate a massive stock buyback. And to pay for it, the hedge fund Pershing Square Capital Management wants Mickey D's to sell about two-thirds of its restaurants and borrow nearly $15 billion in cash. This is Marketplace. Talk about Superfund sites, and most people think old factories, not farms. But a hearing today focuses on ag's dirty side, as Sam Eaton reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk.
As the law stands, farms are subject to the same environmental standards as a chemical plant. Farm advocates claim the rules were meant for factories, not farms. They say terms like hazardous substance and contaminant shouldn't apply to things like manure. But the Sierra Club's Ed Hopkins has put 50,000 dairy cows in a small enclosure, and the line separating the factory from the farm quickly disappears.
There's no difference from the ammonia and hydrogen sulfide industrial farms emit than the ammonia and hydrogen sulfide manufacturing facilities emit.
Despite the parallels, Hopkins says the government rarely enforces emissions violations on farms, and some lawmakers in Washington are trying to keep it that way by exempting agriculture altogether. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
This is American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Toyota. Designing vehicles with hybrid synergy drive for fuel efficiency and low emissions. More at Toyota.com. Toyota, moving forward. By Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by Thrivent Builds, an opportunity for Lutherans and their communities to support the building of decent homes in partnership with families in need. ThriveandBuilds.com.
This is Marketplace, and I'm Cheryl Glazer. A report out today from Early Education Advocates shows states spent $600 million more on preschool this fiscal year than last. That's in spite of a wave of budget cuts and belt tightening in legislatures across the country. Now, pre-K supporters fought hard to get what they wanted in some states, but others chose to gamble on the lottery. From Georgia, Work and Family correspondent Sarah Gardner reports.
Table number one. Table one, clear space.
Snack time is almost over at a preschool in Atlanta. The teacher tries to round up a gaggle of four-year-olds to the reading rug for story time.
Jesse, Jamal.
Little do these tots know, their mid-morning snack, blocks, books, and teachers come courtesy of gambling.
And don't forget to play Treasure Hunt, the Georgia Lottery's new $2 instant game. Instant games from the Georgia Lottery.
Georgia has been relying on its lottery to fund the state's preschool program since 1993. That's when then-Democratic Governor Zell Miller championed the idea amid objections from religious conservatives who opposed gambling. Georgia State University professor Gary Henry.
He was able to put a face on the lottery, and that face was that happy four-year-old kid walking into this clean, beautiful, bright pre-K center.
By using gambling profits, Miller could start a whole new education program without raising taxes. So far, it's worked. Marsha Moore is commissioner of the Department of Early Care and Learning.
Once the lottery came in, we grew from like 15,000 children to 44,000 children, then hit up to 67,000. The growth was tremendous. And the idea was that as the money became available, it was our responsibility to ensure that as many children as possible received these high-quality services.
The state's lottery profits have gone up every year since its inception, but state officials don't know if they'll always be so lucky. That's because neighboring states, South Carolina and Tennessee, have started their own lotteries. Duke University professor Charles Klotfelter says those newcomers could end up stealing some of Georgia's business.
South Carolina's residents will no longer have to go across the border to Augusta to buy those lottery tickets.
Georgia is also funding popular college scholarships with its lottery profits, potentially creating some competition for the money between tots and college-bound teens. But Commissioner Marsha Moore says Georgia's pre-kindergarten program has proven itself a benefit to kids, so she's confident legislators will find a way to keep expanding it. That may, however, require some hard political choices. Next door in Tennessee, where they're just starting a statewide preschool program, courtesy of the Tennessee Lottery, Governor Phil Bredesen has decided to make the hard political choices sooner rather than later. Any future expansion of Tennessee preschool won't come from gamblers, but taxpayers. In Atlanta, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And here in Los Angeles, I'm Cheryl Glazer. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
Bill Gates is
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.